Hello, and welcome to another week at the movies. Julie Ree here, and this is the last of our summer season of movie time. Indeed, it's almost the last movie time. The show, which began back in May 2004, will end on my retirement this coming weekend. And Jason DeRosso will take up the challenge solo in a new film show called The Final Cut, which begins next week. More details a bit later. But because it is almost the last show, I thought you might wish to come with me as I look back. So today, and for an hour on Sunday afternoon, we're bringing you some highlights from conversations I've had with filmmakers down the 20 or so years I've been covering film for Radio National. Coming up, we have Agnes Varda, the so-called mother of the new wave. And on Sunday afternoon at 2, even more, Lars von Trier and Quentin Tarantino. Let's begin, though, with the little bit of fun with which we kicked off movie time back 9 years ago. A special mix to signal what we were to be about. A love of film, a bit of fun.
106 miles to Chicago, got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
You talking to me?
Mr. Vice President, if we don't act now, it's going to be too late.
You talking to me?
No, I just think I'm gonna burp.
You're terrible, Muriel.
On Radio National, Movie Time with Julie Rigg.
The Weekend Film. Thanks, Paul Gough, not only the original producer of Movie Time, but a talented broadcaster and musician. You may have come across his own show, The Quiet Space, late nights on RN, round midnight, on Sundays and Mondays. Paul also has an international reputation as a performance artist called Pimon. His performances and his label push the boundaries of new music and digital composition. Apart from that, he's a talented sound engineer, one of many we have here on RN, a bit of a cranky pants sometimes, but a man with a great sense of humour and a lovely imagination. It's been a joy to work with Paul, one of the many RN colleagues I shall miss like hell. Now, let's forge on, or back indeed, to June 2001. I'd recently seen the marvellous documentary made by Agnes Varda called The Gleaners and I. Her film is about the tradition of gleaning crops after the harvest and the legal rights of the gleaners. But it's also about urban gleaning, the people who pick up the scraps outside restaurants and at the markets, or old furniture and clothing from the street. We meet them as philosophers, not as victims, and a wonderfully wide and eccentric range of people they are. At another level, the film's about the gleaning of ideas and images, about how art is made, and finally, it's about Agnes Varda herself. Agnes in the year 2000, she calls it. She was in her 70s when this film was made, and it's about time passing, or Agnes passing, about ageing. She actually does this gallant thing and focuses her little digital camera on her own hand. We see the wrinkles and the blotches, and at another moment, she films herself running the comb through her hair, the grey near the part where the red dye grows out. Here's Agnes Varda on the line from Paris.
Not only it's a very important subject, a social issue, which is who are those people who eat the leftovers, you know, the leftovers of others? Who is eating my leftovers, you know? And that was really concerning me, like it does to other people. And I thought, instead of having a subject, you know, a subject line, and say, could we find people to illustrate it? I totally had another attitude. I thought, can I meet people who are the subject? So I don't have to explain and make many narration about that. Find the right people who be able to show by themselves, by their life, who are those people who live and eat what we throw away. And can I meet them? Can I speak to them? Will they be able? And they are able to say when and what and how. And so my concern was to be able to meet them, which took certain time, sometimes by chance, sometimes by one tells another one, sometimes just going in the country, going in places, looking alone for people and going in these trailer places, you know, speaking to one to another. So that was the subject and the project. The question was that meanwhile, it was year 2000, and everybody was saying, what's happening to cinema in year 2000? What's happening to, I guess, Australia art in, in year 2000? What's happening to this and that? And one day, I thought, what's happening to Agnès in year 2000? When I was doing that film about what's happening to the gleaners, you know. And it came to me that I'm aging, and I thought, my goodness, I'm aging. I'm still a gleaner. I'm still a filmmaker. I'm still enjoying what I do, enjoying traveling, but I'm aging. And that came, like I say, like gleaning ideas, images, emotion. It's like gleaning also self-impressions that I let myself, I allow myself to live in the film, to let in the film, because I thought, by making a film like this, I don't want to be too separated, too, like in another world than those who speak so honestly, so clearly about themselves. They speak about situations which they could be ashamed, or wish to hide, or wish to say, don't bother with me, don't, you know. And since I got a good approach, and they were so honest, I would say, revealing themselves so much. I thought, you know, I have to be part of that. I should not be like a filmmaker out of it, you know.
Yeah.
And it came naturally that I should be part of the film.
I like that, because you don't stand apart from your subjects, and the subjects are also revealed as sensitive, and they have dignity and intelligence and occasionally humour. And but there is an honesty also, and there is quite a poetry in there about the project of gleaning images.
Well, we all do, you know. We all spend our life, all artists, they spend their life about going in a, you know, reading something, listening a story, going in a cafe. Artists, they glean, you know, shapes, they pick things, and we all, we take quotes, look at Godard, wonderful Godard. Now, this is really people gleaning, you know, facts. They glean potatoes, they glean fruit, they glean furniture in the street. So it became such an important subject that I wanted to cover it by asking questions to lawyers or inquiring here and there. And I must say, I was thrilled, because I really had an incredible chance or luck, whatever you call it, that, you know, I met those incredible people. I think three or four of them are unforgettable. I think sometimes a documentary, you know, brings people that as much unforgettable that a good actress in a good fiction. I think two of them stand, you know, like beautiful. So I was lucky. And they are the flesh of the film, you know.
When a documentary does that, and good documentarists recognize such people, and they're really people who have the capacity to bring forward the drama of their own lives and their own observations. So what's the responsibility of the documentarist there?
Well, it's total, but that's why I think I took my responsibility, and I suddenly used them of film or life. When you say responsibility as a documentary, you mean in the film or in real life?
I was thinking in the film, but I'm curious about both.
Both. In the film, you know, well, it's a choice anyway. You know, a documentary is subjective, and obviously by editing what people say, you could make them look different. You know, I spoke sometimes 3 hours with somebody, and there are 5 minutes in the film. You understand, there is an editing. And I copy all the sound, all what they have said. I think about it, I read, reread, and pick it. There is a choice. And obviously, anybody else could take the same words, the same images, and show something else of these people, these real people. And obviously, I chose to pick what in them was, I would say, the best clear explanation of their own life.
Mm.
And how they had a judgment in their way. Not so much a judgment, that an opinion about the huge waste of our world. And that's interesting because obviously one could say these people are wonderful. Well, they could have been less. I wanted them, the best of them, like when you love somebody, you know, you don't want to show what is so-so. You choose the best. Mm. When you speak about somebody you love, you won't start with what is bad. You'll start with what is good. And obviously, I made that choice because I think I'm fed up with showing, you know, poor people speaking bad, behaving bad, claiming, grumbling. And I thought it was wonderful that they were able to speak without self-pity, with, you know. And that was interesting. And among what they said, I obviously chose what show the strengths of their own nature and character. And so obviously there is a work, because I really had admiration and tenderness for them. I wanted them to look very good, and they do look good.
Mm.
And they meet the audience. Approbation, is that a word?
They do.
You know.
Yes, approbation, exactly.
And people like them. And I feel like I've been the person who has friends and wants other friends to meet them. Mm. I say, oh, I want you to meet, you know, I just have that friend who does this, and I want you to meet her, she's wonderful, I want you to meet that man, he's great. I felt I was the one who said to every person in the audience, oh, I want you to meet this one and this one.
So there's a sense in which the documentarist embraces the subject as a friend.
What do you mean?
Embrace.
Yeah, I have to embrace the subject.
Yeah, as the person, as the subject, yeah.
Oh, they are the subject. And
yeah.
I'm the person telling, being, filming, and not that serious in a way. You know, and I think part of the fluidity and the pleasure that it seems that audience find in this film comes from my lightness in a way.
Mm.
My way of traveling and, you know, playing with my hands and the drugs and, you know, meeting people. And that's important.
Yeah. The gleaning, well, there's so many questions I want to ask you. You talk about playing with your hands. You are there in the film playfully, lightly, but there. But your own Agnes in the year 2000 is also there. And there are some very brave shots in this film when you show us.
What do you mean brave? I mean, you know, I have an attitude as a filmmaker. Cineast. This is not a woman who say, could you give me a cream for my little hands? Because I never wear gloves. I go in the garden, I put my hands directly in the earth. I did that all my life. Now, could I do something for my poor hands? That has nothing to do with this. This is a filmmaker. Filming itself, herself, and seeing a kind of beauty of that ruin, you know, of the skin.
Yeah.
Because I think it has a shape. It has lines. It's like a painter, you know. I'm not into fishing for compliments. I don't care. I get compliments anyway. And, you know, it happened many times that after a screening, when I come to speak with the audience, I've seen people kissing my hand. And I say, what do you do? And women, and say, like you did anyway, you're brave. You say, I'm not brave. I mean, enjoy.
This is how we are.
Enjoy the shape of things, you know.
Yeah.
And the shape of things is including, you know, yourself.
Yeah.
The wrinkles, the lines, the vein, this is the beauty. The same thing, you look at the tree and you see how, you know, the old tree has these incredible shapes, and you say, ah, what a wonderful olive tree. Why couldn't you say what a wonderful hand?
Yeah, what a...
Do you understand that?
Yeah, no, I understand that, and it's also a respect for the things that are not new. And the people.
Well, a respect for the life, the way it goes.
Yeah.
You know, aging is just a part of life. This is, you know, we have been so much in a civilization of be beautiful, be young, be thin, be this, be that, be rich, and consume.
Mm.
And the film is totally on the other side.
Mm.
What is the leftover of consummation? Tenderness and peace with people that some people don't even look at them. They see them in the garbage can, they turn their head because they think they will be ashamed.
Mm.
But it's the one who looks who should be ashamed, you know.
Mm.
Because as the one, he opens the garbage can, you think, well, stupid people who throw everything.
You know, in Australia we have a word which I think we only use in this country, and it's not so much gleaning in the agricultural sense, but it's a tradition of using objet trouve, and it's called
objet trouve.
Okay,
you call it objet trouve?
No, we call it scrounging. It's a verb, to scrounge. S-C-R-O-U-N-G-E, to scrounge.
Scrounge, my God, what a nice word.
It's a wonderful word. You see, like you, I hate waste. I love scrounging.
My God, what a beautiful word. Clown. Because in America they said rummaging, picking, what did they say? They found a lot of words.
Mm.
And gleaning.
Mm. But it's great to present us with the tradition of
now, I have to say something.
Yeah.
In French we have masculin and féminin, you know. Mm. So the title is Les Glaneurs et la Glaneuse.
Which
doesn't go in English language because you don't have la, you know, you don't have the woman gleaner, you know.
Mm.
So we had to do it the gleaners and I, which emphasize in a way the I.
Mm.
When in French, you know, la glaneuse is a very anonymous gleaner, an anonymous woman gleaner.
Mm.
That little nuance makes, in a way, explain your first question. But it makes it more important than me.
Yeah, it makes
which
it...
Which I did look for that.
Yeah, it makes...
I must say, I had incredible reaction to this film.
Mm.
Incredible letters, never in my life.
Why do you think...
I know. Now, little by little, I find out.
Yeah.
It's because it concerns everybody for different reasons. From their grandmother, their mother, the country. Many people come from the country, you see. But also, now, today... This is not about the past, this is about today in the street. And they know they have seen these people. They know they have thought of it without thinking of it. You know, it's like giving shape and words.
But
and
also,
I think that they like the shape of the film, you know. The shape is a resistance. What is a resistance?
Yeah.
Somebody who resists, you know.
Yeah.
I resist the invasion of huge cinema, of star system, of serial killers. Of
the society of waste.
And trademarks and all this, that the people, they are part of it, but they don't like it. Most of them don't like it.
The young man who strides down the street in his big, heavy Wellington boots, his rubber boots, saying, I need
incredible.
This.
It's the city of Aix-en-Provence.
Yeah, saying, and I need...
It's incredibly bright, you know.
Yes, and he speaks for a lot of us. I think.
Yeah, but, you know, because the way he does it with aggressivity, you know.
Mm.
When he says, oh, stupid people throw everything. It's funny because he's mad. He's not bad. He thinks people are stupid.
Mm.
He said, I'm the king of the city. Like in gambling, you know, je ramasse la mise. It's a difficult to translate. It's like a gambler who gets everything on the table, you know. When
yeah.
he puts his arms and gets the all the jetons, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that in that part of surprise, because I was doing my little documentary in my corner very discreetly. I didn't announce it. I thought, you know, 2 weeks in the theater and television, a channel of, you know, documentaries. I felt I need to do it, but nobody would be caring about that. Now, suddenly I'm in French selection in Cannes. Did you get the list of the award? I couldn't believe how many I got.
Yes,
do you
incredible.
Have a fax? I should send you the fax just for the fun. That's almost a joke. I got so many awards with this film. The film went to 70 festivals. And here in Paris, that you saw it in Paris
yep.
in July or August?
I saw it in September last year.
Cool. It is still playing, my dear.
It
is 48 week or 50 week now, I don't know, more or less.
You're with Movie Time here on RN, Julie Rigg with you, and we're listening to one of the most inspiring filmmakers I ever interviewed, Agnès Varda, the so-called mother of the new wave. I recorded this interview back in 2001 when her lovely documentary, The Gleaners and I, first screened in Australia. Agnès Varda is now 84. And still working. Last year, she finished a 5-part television documentary series, again with her little handheld digital camera.
Let me ask you about one of my favourite shots in the film. You bring home the empty clock face. It's one of the things you have scrounged. and then you put it on a table.
Two cats.
And the two, yeah. And then it's like there is a travelling shot. Your face is travelling. It is delicious. How did you do that?
But, you know, it's such a simple thing. I'm with my friend. He scrunched that clock and he threw it away. And if I had been fast enough, I would have entered into the shot like I did with the potatoes and say, oh, get it. But the minute after the shot was finished, about to be to the car, I said, oh, my God, I love that finally. Actually, I love that. So I go back and get it, throw it on my couch at my place. Don't think about it. 2, 3, 4 days. Then I look at it and say, oh, my God, what a nice theme. This is the kind of, my kind of time. Mm. You know, it doesn't go. It doesn't pass. So I put it on my two little Chinese cats that I have near the window, just put it on, and it looks beautiful. So I do the shot of that. And then since the words bring ideas and the ideas bring words, I say, well, it's not passing. The time is not passing. But I'm passing. I'm about to go. So I actually did the real physical idea. The clock doesn't pass time, but I pass it behind. So I went to the back. This is at my place. The clock is still there, you know, still at the window. I went in the patio of my own place. I took the skateboard of one of my grandsons. So I put myself on the skateboard, and there was one of my trainees kneeling, you know, and pushing me slowly. While the camera was inside shooting itself, you know. So that's the kind of natural idea coming from just words. Mm. And I think words mean so much in our mind. You know, our mind goes on thinking all the time, but it's a light thinking. It's not, I'm not philosophical, I'm not metaphysical. But my mind goes on, and my words float in my mind, you know. And that's how I say, time doesn't pass, but I pass. It's very simple. It makes sense, no?
No, it does. And your father, you've had a long and influential career in film.
I don't know how long. I did so few films.
Yeah.
If you think about it, few films.
Yeah, but
some people do a film a year, you know. I could have done 50 films.
Yeah, but so maybe they wouldn't be so interesting as these ones. Has the digital camera been a liberation for you?
Oh, yes. It has been for that specific subject. I'm not saying that next time I don't take a huge camera, you know. But for that subject, because of the discretion, I mean, I had to approach people without frightening them, you know. So I had to be like by my own and telling, you know, I do that because I love to meet people, try to witness my society and things like that. Sometimes I could say that having that camera, it doesn't frighten anybody, you know, it doesn't frighten people. But then I would come back with my crew if they accept.
Yeah.
No, I would say, if you help me, if you agree to come into that that thing that we have to, I think it makes sense for the people to know who you are and how you behave. Then I said, now, if you agree, can I come with, you know, a person who does a good sound, a person who does a better camera, better or not better, but, you know, another way of working. But they would, if they accept, we would come, you know, and do it. If they won't, say, well, it's okay like you do. I don't want to have other people. I would finish myself. Plus, about my own shots, I was alone, you know. I wouldn't ask a DP to say, can you do that or that? I mean, feel like I would become like, I don't know, narcissistic or something.
But
when I was speaking myself, like taking notes, you know, filming myself, speaking to the little camera, his narration had been improvised while I was, you know, when I was filming my hand with one hand. And I felt an incredible pleasure of being, you know, the filmer and the filmer. I mean, how could I say? That one hand could film the other one. Was like explaining our whole life, you know, like, we want to be part of it, we want to be the subject, but we want to be the object, we want everything. And I felt a real pleasure to say, by with one hand filming the other one, it's closer, a kind of circle, you know.
It does.
Because If I lie to myself, the other hand doesn't lie. If I film like a crazy, you know, the other one can't be crazy. Mm. Something that I liked very much in it.
Mm.
But also, it's a nice little tool.
Mm.
And it comes out beautifully on screen. Did you see the shot?
Yes, I did.
I shot my cat, I shot the books. It looks beautiful and sharp on screen, a huge screen.
It's a possibility for play as well.
It's a possibility to also to not depend on heavy techniques, even though technicians are nice people.
Mm.
But I remember when I did a film called 101 Nights, we were 50, you know.
Mm.
And that's nice also, 50-person work. But in a way, where is the little trembling, the little personal emotion to be an artist? Where is it in the middle of all that? It's difficult, you know.
Mm. What's your project now?
Well, I've been accompanying this film quite a while, enjoying people's answers, enjoying the different approach to filming. But, I don't know exactly if I wish to continue. I could continue in that. I don't want to do the Gleaners too, you see. return of the Gleaners.
Mm.
I could have maybe the same success. But you see,
Want to go back to the crew of 50 technicians? And,
no, I don't think so.
The luxury of big cinema?
I don't know the luxury. I don't care about luxury.
Mm.
I love what I did, that walking in the field for hours, you know, being tired in a way, speaking to... I love that. But maybe I don't do another documentary right away. Well, I let it happen, you know, because I never make a film that people ask me to do or bring me a package with a good book and two actors and all that. I think cinema should be made by coming from nowhere and becoming a film. This, I believe in this, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I made so few films.
Agnes Varda, well, thank you
so
again.
Enjoy the fact that I'm proud that the film has been picked by Cine Festival, which makes me feel so good. The only thing missing is an Australian distributor. Come on, send me one.
We will scrounge one for you.
Scrounge one.
Okay.
I had a good time.
Agnes
Enjoy
Varda.
Your day.
You
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
I send you the facts for fun.
Agnes Varda. The Gleaners and I is available on DVD, as indeed are the documentaries she's made more recently, including The Beaches of Agnes and Agnes de Si de la Varda, her made-for-television series about recent voyages of discovery. Among them is an episode she filmed in the disorder of the studio of the iconoclastic filmmaker Chris Marker, her longtime friend, a man who never allowed himself to be photographed or interviewed, but who constantly embraced new ways of making film and whose last film was indeed a cat video posted on the internet. Marker died in July this year, the day after his 90th birthday. This has been the penultimate edition of Movie Time, but you may wish to join me again on Sunday for the final edition, when I shall be broadcasting interviews with Lars von Trier and Quentin Tarantino. I'm Julie Rigg. See you in the front stalls.